Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studio in New York City, and I welcome you. We have a powerful show today, lots of healing information, including what you can do if you have ulcerative colitis, to reduce Alzheimer's disease, to help you if you're diabetic, and a more in-depth report from Dr. Paul Navar, medical doctor, on what should men do if you're concerned about loss of muscle mass, loss of libido, your skin's beginning to sag, your energy is waning, you no longer have your strength and vitality. A special report today on testosterone, some of the things we should be concerned about, but also why we've been given a lot of misinformation that could end up hurting us. So I'll straighten all that out. Also today, we're going to talk about how to keep cancer from metastasizing in your body. That could save a lot of lives with something very inexpensive and tasty. And how we can help boost our fat metabolism and lose weight without any hassle. Those are some of the areas we're covering. And if time permits, we'll also talk about a deeper sleep, getting a good night's sleep, and with one little helper, and it's not a medication, from Dr. Julia Scope. From our environmental segment today, we're going to talk about permafrost. Now, that is what covers a lot of the northern altitude, Iceland, Greenland, the Russian steppes, Canada. It's a huge body that is covered in permanent cold, but it's melting, and hence methane's coming up. And methane is much more destructive to our environment and more of an impact upon global warming than CO2. So from Florida State University, permafrost thawing could accelerate global warming, and that could just speed up everything. And this is published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, our most prestigious and respected scientific group and journal in the United States. From all of you who said, what can we do if disaster strikes or before disaster strikes, to in a reasonable and responsible way to prepare ourselves to have a quality of life and sustainable. I'm going to begin an ongoing series, and the first of these today will be the corporate government state. It's out of date, and how we need to take the survival and sustainability of our lives into our own hands. My guest from the United Kingdom on Skype will be Gregory Sams. And he's been changing modern corporate culture from the age of 19. And he operated the historic natural organic seed restaurant in London in the 1960s. And within a few years, he ran the nation's first and foremost natural and organic food enterprises. So he created the original veggie burger and helped steer the market for vegetarian food and founded Whole Earth Foods. He published Harmony Magazine, and later Seed, the Journal of Organic Living. So he's been at the forefront of this for a long time, a real pioneer in the field. So we're going to take a step in being more sustainable. Now, I'm not talking about the reality programs that show you people getting all their guns and getting a bunker. That's not what this is about. This is about doing it the right way. So we'll get into that. Let's begin. We have a lot to cover. Ulcerative colitis should be very rare, and it is not in the United States. Interesting, when I travel around the world, I'm always asking, what are the conditions that you are afflicted with? And the itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, appendicitis, rare, almost non-existent in Africa, or at least in those cultures that continue to exercise, that eat a whole grain and plant-based diet. But in the Western countries, especially France and the United States and Great Britain, very common. What can we do about it? Well, most people are taking drugs, steroids. Not a good idea. But according to Annals of Internal Medicine, a nutrient, phosphatidylcholine, reduces steroid dependency in ulcerative colitis. This is very promising because what it is, it's inflammation in your bowel. And conventional treatments with immunosuppressants, that's what it does. So you may turn off some of the inflammation in one part of your body, but then you could get a cold or flu, pneumonia, and end up getting really sick in another part of your body. You don't want anything tampering with your immune system. If anything, you want a naturally enhanced immune response. By the way, breastfeeding gives you that. There's nothing better in life to start than, it's not infant formula, it's breast milk. And if your mother has been healthy and conscientious, hasn't smoked or drank, and has taken a year before pregnancy to really juice and cleanse and detoxify, then what she is doing in preparing her body is indeed going to allow you, that developing child, to live a longer and healthier life. You have natural immunity. And science and medicine has been dead wrong in denying the virtue of natural immunity. In any case, phosphatidylcholine in colonic mucus is thought to be a risk factor, not having enough of it, for ulcerative colitis. So a German research team gave 500 milligrams, which is a good amount, four times a day, or a placebo to 60 ulcerative colitis patients who were long-term steroid treatment users. There was a 50% improvement to get off the steroids and help the body. So, if you know someone who has ulcerative colitis, phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylcholine. We have a lot of diabetics, and diabetics are more at risk of heart disease. Big risk. Now, let's just do the numbers. We have about 318 to 20 million people in the United States. When you look, take out the children or people up to 18, and what you're looking at is the largest group of people per population in the world who are overweight, diabetic, and have heart disease and high blood pressure. I mean, it's amazing how sick we are compared to any other nation per population. If you have diabetes, you're far more at risk of having a heart attack. Here's the latest on what you can do in a good way that can help you. Supplementation with vitamin E can reduce the risk of adverse cardiovascular events by 50% among type 2 diabetics with a defective gene, and so that's important. How much vitamin E? I'm suggesting anywhere between 400 and 800 units. In this particular study, they gave 400 units a day for 18 months and cut by half the risk of adverse events. I would say if they double that to 800 units a day and use mixed tocopherols, not just alpha tocopherol, but also beta tocopherol and gamma tocopherol and delta tocopherol and alpha tocopherol, that would make an enormous difference. So vitamin E cuts your risk of cardiovascular events in half if you have diabetes. We have the largest group of people in America now than ever in our history suffering from brain conditions. Interesting, because right now there's not one or two, but three topics on the same issue, brain aging, on PBS stations around the country. I have one of those with Reboot Your Brain and Reversing Brain Aging Naturally, and it's very successful. We're getting top ratings, and it's being played in all the cities. I get emails all the time, people seeing it in Seattle. We have a lot of people listening to this program right now in Seattle and Portland and Corpus Christi and all across the country, but a lot out on the West Coast. Why? Why are so many people interested in this topic? Well, it's because we have about 100 million Americans who are over the age of 40. That means that all the things you did earlier in life, the drinking, the smoking, anything else, the bad diet, the stress, that all prematurely ages your brain because all those cause inflammation. So learning how to prevent inflammation and learning how to turn it off and learning how to repair the brain, that's the whole purpose of these programs. And I'm glad to see so many people are waking up and deciding, all right, they're 40, 50, 60, 70. Let's do something constructive. This just adds to what we already know. This is in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. It's 8,000 men and women in this study for 4 years. And those that consume the most fruits and vegetables had the least dementia overall. Weekly fish consumption was associated with a reduced risk of all causes of dementia, including Alzheimer's, and the omega-3 fatty acids from the fruits and vegetables and the omega-3s. So the takeaway message is simple. We need DHA, the active fraction of the omega-3 fatty acids, to help in our brain. By the way, it also helps in our heart. It turns off inflammation in your heart. It helps in your liver. If you have hepatitis, sclerosis of the liver, it helps turn off that inflammation. If you have enlarged prostate, inflammation in the prostate, if you have inflammation in your lungs from asthma and bronchitis and pulmonary conditions, it turns off inflammation everywhere in your body. So the more fruits and vegetables that you consume, the better you are. And don't forget to add 1 tablespoon of chia seeds to your smoothies in the morning because they're very rich in omega-3 fatty acids, far more than a lot of other things that we use. Also, we now know that if you have a low level of vitamin D, you're more likely to have knee arthritis pain. This is the latest study on this from the American College of Rheumatology. It says patients with osteoarthritis of the knee who also have low levels of vitamin D experience worse pain and decreased mobility compared to those with the highest levels of vitamin D. So I'm suggesting about 1 to 5,000 units of vitamin D3 per day. Now we are looking at people who use their supplements tend to weigh less, experience less hunger, and are healthier. This is in the British Journal of Nutrition. Now, of course, if you're really conscious about your diet and supplements and exercise, for most people who are doing that, they're also going to realize, why should I gorge myself? And I'm not going to be eating late at night. I'm not going to be eating lots of foods that I know are unhealthy, which in and of itself is a conscious choice to be healthier. So it just goes to show that those who want to be healthy are going to make healthier choices, and hence are not going to have all that body weight. So one more study proving for those of you who were doing the right thing by being conscientious of the choices you were making, good for you. I was getting my juices, I always do every day before my program, and that's because I start my day very early, and I have to get my workouts in and then prepare all the my list for the day of the things ideally I want to achieve. And hours before anyone else gets in the office, I'm working. So I have my my smoothie early. But then before I go on the air, it's probably about 6 hours since I've had anything, so I have a nice big juice. And I have a very concentrated juice. It's not only fresh juice, but I add some compounding powders to it to really kick in and help my cells. And I'm seeing a lot of people I hadn't seen before coming in to get juices. A fire truck pulled up, and a bunch of guys on the fire truck got off, came in, and got juices. Well, that's good. I saw police officers getting juices. I saw some workers at a construction site down the block, two guys on that site at least, came in and were getting juices. All this within a day. So more Americans are realizing, change your diet, start juicing, and be healthier. Here's something else that you can share with anyone who you know has cancer. This is from the study from the American Journal of Pharmacology and Toxicology. Quote, this review does an excellent job of consolidating our knowledge about modified citrus pectins' remarkable therapeutic impact. In particular, it identifies modified citrus pectins' different mechanisms of action against metastatic cancer, heavy metal toxicity, and chronic life-threatening illnesses related to excess gallatin 3, end quote. Now, what's this mean? It means this. They've been able to take citrus, like lemons, grapefruit, limes, and they modify it so that it can get into the system. And while modified citrus pectin cannot treat cancer once it begins, this natural substance that occurs in the pulp, the white, fleshy part of the citrus, especially grapefruit, can keep cancer from spreading. That's called metastasis. And modified citrus pectin is a preventative medicine for cancer, not a curative one, but it's been proven to be extremely effective. Now, it shouldn't be confused with pectin that is sometimes used for cooking. Modified citrus pectin is in all citrus, but occurs in higher amounts in grapefruit, and the active ingredient in modified citrus pectin has been shown to suppress what is called angiogenesis, the process by which cancer cells survive by attaining blood through the blood vessels that each cell grows. And without a steady flow of blood, the cancer cell cannot survive. And then the programmed cell death occurs, which is a good thing. The cancer cells die. And individuals with advanced cancer, modified citrus pectin, will not be effective. But as a preventative measure, the substance can prohibit cancer cells from forming at all. Cancer cells must also spread in order to debilitate the person with illness and cause death. So modified citrus pectin works effectively in this manner as well. It's great for prevention. This is also from the American Journal of Pharmacology and Toxicology, quote, pectin has been of high interest to cancer biologists due to its involvement in metal carcinogen detoxification and its anti-carcinogenic properties. In particular, citrus pectin and modified citrus pectin have been shown to have a significant inhibitory role in cancer cell metastasis, invasion, angiogenesis, and survival. The interreactions and inactivation of oncogenes by citrus pectin and modified citrus pectin in prostate, breast, lung, liver, melanoma, and multiple myeloma cancer suggests that citrus pectin and modified citrus pectin can play an important role in cancer chemotherapy and cancer prevention. So, that's good news. That I'm glad to hear about. For those of you who want to lose more weight, green tea can help. The latest on this is that 16 weeks, quote, of green tea extract and exercise led to a significant reduction in fasting blood sugar levels, insulin levels, according to Molecular Nutrition Food Research Journal. So, if you want to lose weight, green tea and exercise, that'll do the trick. And that's good. Now, a little more in-depth explanation is something that all men are concerned about, but have not generally discussed. Let us put it this way. When men realize that they no longer have a libido, normal intimacy no longer inspires them to action, or even if they want to, they can't, then they get very depressed. It's a challenge to their masculinity. We didn't know as a nation that we had so many men who were having problems until Viagra came out. Then suddenly millions of men said, yeah, I could use that. Well, what men could really use is not Viagra, but rather a healthier balance in their testosterone. It's testosterone that keeps a man unique in his masculinity, muscle mass, determination, that sense of chi drive, quality skin tone, energy, libido, and a better sense of emotions, less depression. By the time a man reaches their older years, most of their testosterone is gone. They probably have about 20 to 30% of what they had when they were in their 20s or 30s. And this decline in testosterone occurs gradually, generally by about age 35. You start to see it going down. Now, what that happens is it creates a greater risk of diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. Now, that is a historical picture, but, and here's the caveat, a man reaching 35 today, if he's the average man, is going to be far along in disease and biological aging than a man reaching 35 in 1970. Because today, we are more stressed, less exercised, and our whole diet is filled with refined and processed foods, pro-inflammatory foods. So we're really putting ourselves at risk of dying early. Well, testosterone deficiency can also lead to a number of disturbing symptoms. You start to lose your stamina. You lose your lean muscle mass. You lose your libido. Anxiety, depression comes on. Cognitive decline becomes common. This is known as andropause. It is a male version of menopause that women experience. And unlike menopause, however, the drop in testosterone is so gradual that the symptoms of andropause appear over a longer period of time and are often ignored for a while or simply attributed to getting older. Now, here's the good news. Many symptoms of testosterone deficiency can be reversed by restoring youthful testosterone levels in a variety of ways. Millions of men are now using testosterone-building supplements and even testosterone itself on a regular basis. But here's where it becomes problematic and we have to have facts. Testosterone is the primary male sex hormone. It's vital for sustaining proper erectile function and libido. It's also critically involved in building muscle, burning fat, supporting endothelial function, energy levels, mood, immune function, and your bone density. Hence, millions of men in the United States suffer from the effects of low testosterone levels. And this population of testosterone-deficient men will only grow in the future. Low testosterone is associated with an increased death and disability. In fact, a recent study found that men with lower testosterone levels were more likely to die from cardiovascular disease and all causes compared with men with higher levels. The authors conclude that low testosterone may be a predictive marker for those at high risk of cardiovascular disease. Another review from Baylor College of Medicine reported that there is a higher prevalence of depression, coronary heart disease, osteoporosis and fractures, fragility, and even dementia with low testosterone states. So, what do you do? The medical community has been slow to recognize the consequences of low testosterone levels in aging males. In fact, wrongly believes that restoring youthful levels of testosterone is dangerous and unwanted. Now, how'd that come about? Back in the mid-1900s, some drug company sold a synthetic and chemically altered testosterone. It was called methyl testosterone. They pawned this chemical off as real testosterone, even though it does not naturally exist in the human body. And after several years on the market, some men taking this particular chemical developed liver cancer. But that was called testosterone therapy. And hence, it was condemned as dangerous, and as a result, it fell out of favor, meaning testosterone therapy. But this was only one artificial substance. It had nothing to do with real testosterone. And while testosterone is a member of a group of compounds known as anabolic steroids, it is different and less potent than the illegal synthetic compounds that you've been hearing about all these athletes using over and over again. So what we have now is we have to look at how do we get testosterone. So let's just do a primer. If you're deficient, you run the risk of cardiovascular disease, you run the risk of insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. because a lot of research suggests that low testosterone levels may be intimately linked to insulin resistance and its related condition of metabolic syndrome and diabetes. The same is true for heart disease. So, a primer now. Testosterone is the chief male hormone. It's essential for libido and erectile function and plays a crucial role in mood, energy, bone health, and body composition. Testosterone levels decline with age, generally starting about mid-30. And diminished levels of testosterone are linked with depression, fatigue, obesity, and cognitive decline. You increase your risk of heart disease and all causes of death if you have low testosterone. Restoring it is definitely beneficial for your heart, your body composition, your mood, and your memory. Now, bioidentical testosterone has not been found to have adverse effects on healthy prostate glands. In fact, it may help improve prostate symptoms in men with low normal testosterone levels, and testosterone therapy is contradicted in men with prostate cancer. Now, regular blood testing can help you and your physician decide if testosterone therapy is right for you, and optimizing testosterone level requires a multi-pronged approach that includes a good healthy diet, lots of juicing, proper supplements, exercising, and where necessary, bioidentical testosterone hormones. And so that's what you should do. And on an upcoming program, I'll go into more depth about how I approach helping testosterone. And generally, a testosterone test costs about $200-$250. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Well, that's some of the music you're going to be hearing tomorrow evening at our celebration dance party. Haven't done one in years. Looking forward to it. Hope that, and we had about four people call. We called them and who are not coming, so we got room for four people. I mean, we've had over 1,000 people sign up. If you want to come to the dance party tomorrow evening on the Upper West Side, it's free. Celebrate. I'm really looking forward to seeing people from this audience who've been to previous parties over the last 25 to 30 years. This is our 51st party we're doing. And you can call the number if you want to come. That number is 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. Just a couple program announcements. This Sunday, we begin our Natural Living Running Club training. Both regular training and those who want to train for the New York City Marathon will be running, jogging, and race walking the marathon. Doesn't matter what your shape is now, we'll get you in shape to do it. About 28,000 people we've trained. You'll see about 15 of our coaches, myself there. 9 o'clock, 5th Avenue and 90th Street. 9 o'clock, 5th Avenue and 90th Street, right at the entrance to Central Park. That's this coming Sunday. Look forward to seeing you there. I have a special for you. This is a phenomenal special. Two things for less than the price of one, you're saving $100. Here it is. Green Stuff, 300 vegan capsules, and Red Stuff, 300 vegan capsules. The two together today, only $54.95. Wow. You're going to get cranberries, strawberries, apples, cherries, red raspberries, peaches, pears, papayas, mangoes, watermelon, red currants, nectarines, pink grapefruit, blood oranges. You're going to get the pineapple, lemon, lime, tangerine, apricot. Yep, and you're also going to get that's just in the red stuff. And the green stuff, you're getting the full spectrum of the kamut juice, some wheatgrass juice, some barley green juice, and alfalfa juice, and oatgrass juice, and broccoli, and parsley, and kale, and cabbage, and spirulina, yucca. It's just terrific. So you're getting green stuff and red stuff both in capsule, vegan capsule. And all you got to do is make a phone call, and you're making an enormous savings. Our number is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or if you're listening to this on the internet, it's late at night, you can just go to the store and you can purchase it. The special will be there. Green Stuff and Red Stuff in capsules together. And this way people can take the capsules, put them in their pocket, and take them to work and have them when they want. Green Stuff and Red Stuff, two different products together, an enormous savings. All right? Only $54.95 for both together. How about that? 877-627-5065. Now, we're going to go to my guest. He is on the line now on Skype. Remember, Skype doesn't have quite the broadcast quality yet that we'd like, but I'm sure we'll be able to hear him. I gave you his bio earlier, Gregory Sams in the United Kingdom. Hi, Gregory. Gregory, are you on the line? Hi, Gregory.
Hello. Hi, Gary.
Gregory, aside from the rare incidences today where the state and government actually shows a little bit of care in helping those in the greatest need in our society, when we look at government today and the corporate state objectively and within the larger scheme of our human potential, we have to conclude that government does a dismal, wretched job. And this is not a political statement. I'm not aligned with any political party. I'm just looking for the truth. And I'm appalled by what I see. The system is well past being broken. I do not believe it can be fixed. I do not believe it's going to redeem itself by changing. I believe the corporate interests are too strongly empowered. And it's rather foolish to think that the culture of governance and corporate finance will change sufficiently to deal with the urgent problems we face. If they were, they would have. We haven't seen them. We haven't seen them move on the environmental issues at all. Not a smidget. We haven't seen them with inequality. We haven't seen them stop home foreclosures. We haven't seen them stop at all, or less than they've actually increased on student loans, on credit card loans, on payday loans, on corruption at every level. So I'm not buying into any of this idea that we have the capacity, let alone the potential, to make any meaningful change. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that I have to be a victim of it. I can sit there and watch Katrina until Katrina is destroying me and my environment, or I can choose to make a more hospitable, humane, and sustainable environment. And so that's what our interest is with what we're doing today. And since you've been an advocate for healthy, wholesome foods, nutrition for many decades, and I'd like for you to take us on a journey, the journey of how we can go from where we have been to where we need to be to create sustainability.
Okay, let me start out by putting something in perspective here, and I'm just going to read a very short quote, and which goes, "The budget should be balanced, public debt should be reduced, the arrogance of officialdom should be tempered, and assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed." Now that's Cicero in Rome, 63 BCE. And I'm pointing out that, you know, we've had popes and pharaohs and emperors and presidents and parliaments. We've had lots of different variations on the theme of government, people on the top telling people on the bottom how things should be. And sometimes we've had better luck. We've had good guys at the top with good ideas, but they're still telling people what to do with the threat of doing them damage if they don't do it, doing us damage if we don't follow their lines. And that's where the flaw is. It doesn't matter how you choose who is at top. The actual mechanism of do this or I'm going to damage you doesn't get sustainable evolution and doesn't get the results that it's looking for. So that's really my main point, is to stop expecting that some change of face, change of policy is going to make a difference, and stop expecting them to solve the problems of the world, because their only route to solution is to say, give us more money. We're going to have green taxes now to help the environment. Give us more money. And that's the basic problem, that when you add all the taxes together, half or more of our money is being sucked into a system that is not connected to us by the feedback loops that connect us to everything else in the world.
I appreciate your opening statement. And yet people, not all people by any means, but a majority of the people want to believe that they are incapable of survival or sustainability without constant government input. And partly it's because the people, the Rush Limbaughs and others who say, be self-sufficient. But their idea of self-sufficient is that somehow let corporate America, let the free market, let neoliberalism, let globalization be the support you need for the future. Just keep the government out of it. They're wrong. Government doing anything on the part of the behalf of the people, to be fair, they haven't done it. So where does that let people start the journey they need and take a step by step to what they could actually do as of today?
Well, I think there's no real alternative but to take responsibility, or take more responsibility for our own lives. Because even though people, fair enough, if somebody wants to let somebody else take care of them, that's their decision. But the state is not doing a good job. And that's wherein the problem lies. And we recently had hundreds of billions paid out to banks to stop them from going under, because if they went under, the state would have gone under. And if the state goes under, that's a real possibility. People think that's unthinkable, but they're not meeting their budget. They're not sustainable. So there's no real option but to be responsible for ourselves. And it's a tough one, but we are also human beings, and we do look after each other. We always have done. Charity comes from our genes. It's not something we're forced to do. And there still are lots of charitable organizations, even though so much of our money is taken away in taxes. And if you imagine we had twice as much money in circulation, real money, not borrowed money, not printed money, but real wealth that we had created, that was under our management, our feedback loops, there'd be so much less hunger, poverty, need for the state and its safety net, and there would also be more money to feed the natural charitable instincts of humanity in our pockets.
Since you've been an advocate for healthy, wholesome foods and nutrition for many decades, use our government-supported industrial agriculture paradigm as an example of how disconnected the state is from the nutritional and health needs of its population.
Absolutely. My great-great-grandfather spent 7 years in Wisconsin clearing rocks and trees from the ground to create a farm. He made a living out of that farm. He built a house. His son and my grandfather built a farm, made money. I used to visit Uncle Floyd at his farm many times as a kid. All these farmers now lose money. They survive on government subsidies because that feedback loop has been broken. Farmers used to grow what people wanted to eat. Now, and that seems simple. It seems, you know, obvious, but that was a feedback loop. Now the government moves in and genetically modified crops, 40% of Americans' corn crop is fed to automobiles instead of people, and they use more energy producing a liter of biofuel then the leader biofuel produces. But that is the madness of the state being involved and not connected with what it's doing.
You argue that chaos theory provides a theoretical alternative to state governance and that places the solutions in human self-organizing capacity outside of powerful institutions. So first, briefly explain the basic principles of chaos theory that generate stable systems, and then relate this to our innate capabilities for organizing both our own individual lives and our communities to a more sustainable mode of living that will more likely assure our survival in the future. Then follow that up with explain why a mode of community living that is self-organizing is preferable to living in a much larger collective, such as a nation state that is centralized and operates in a completely top-down manner. And let me just pull back for one moment here. Yesterday I had shared a juice with a gentleman from Columbia University, which is right near where the juice store is I go to each day. And we were having a discussion. He said, well, what's your latest film? And I said, it's on poverty. And he said, we've always had poverty. I said, well, we don't have the poverty today in ways that have impacted as many people as we've had in other times, but we have a different type of poverty today. We have people who at one level seem to have everything they need, but then they're not living a quality of life. They're stressed, they're insecure, they're not paid enough to have savings, they're not paid enough to stop and go into retirement. Many of them have put money into their funds that have been mismanaged. And then a lot of people were not told, don't use your home as an ATM machine. You know, don't stop taking out the equity in it. And they did. They took out equity for everything, trillions of dollars, and all in a bubble economy. But no one told them it was a bubble economy. No, not a single human being in government had the courage to go on television in the last 12 years and say, look, this isn't real. Real estate should appreciate between 1 and 3% per year, not 20 or 30 or 50% per year. If you're doing it, it's going to implode and you're going to lose everything. No one was honest with him. So I said, take a look at the Upper West Side where we're at now. The greatest concentration of intellect, wealth, creativity, and success in the world between 116th, which is Columbia University, and 57th Street from River to Park. And I said, you won't find people are concerned about their own personal security, where they're going to eat their next meal, and if they have a place to sleep tonight. But then come outside of New York with me. Let me take you across America in cities and suburbs and rural areas, and I'll show you the new poverty. We're not talking about Appalachian poverty. We're not talking about Alabama dirt farm poverty. We're not talking about Bayou, Mississippi poverty and Louisiana poverty. We're talking about new poverty, where you've got adjunct professors sleeping in homeless shelters. And he said, you're kidding. I said, no, you've been cloistered. You're not a part of the real world. You're part of this controlled world. And hence, that's what I see so many of our policymakers, the media pundits, the academics, they're removed from what it means to have to understand that what are you going to do if you don't get food? What are you going to do if your water's not there? What are you going to do if you're in an earthquake or hurricane or tornado? What are you going to do? And no one is planning any of this, as if it's not going to happen. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, poverty, I did a little calculation last night after I found out that the cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan had been $3.7 trillion up to 2011. That would have been $191 million for every city in America. And that's not even the whole cost. That doesn't count storage of weapons, development of them, all sorts of other costs associated. So first point is there wouldn't be that much poverty if we did not have this incredibly hungry monkey on our back sucking out so much money from our society. And you were asking a question about chaos theory earlier. And chaos theory, it hasn't got a theory like E equals MC squared to it, but it's the recognition that chaotic systems self-organize. And a chaotic system is something with more pieces than you can count, acting unpredictably and independently. And the rainforest is an example of one. With nobody planning where it's going to rain, where the frogs' trees go, and yet the whole system fits together as a harmonious functioning whole. You get even water molecules doing it in a weather system. And we do it when we go beyond agriculture, the actual food we eat in the city. It's miraculous that in New York City or in Hong Kong or Tokyo, you've got tens of millions of people, all of them with individual palates, individual times they get hungry, and individual wallets. And they all get fed what they want, what they can afford, when they want it, every day with nobody planning it. That's chaos theory, organization from the bottom up. And we look at everything we do have in the world, from telephones to smartphones to garden hose and kitchen equipment and cars, and it's all stuff that people develop. The state doesn't develop anything. It just comes in and says, hey, now you've done all the hard work, we'll make sure you don't screw it up, and we'll make this rule, that rule, and you just play us all this money to fund us doing that. But you don't see politicians out, you know, building roads or teaching or doing any of the things that they like to monitor. And that's where I got into chaos theory, wrote my book, which is titled The State is Out of Date, We Can Do It Better, because chaos theory is kind of shows us why that top-down organization doesn't work. Because, you know, as we know, you know, the one butterfly's wing speed can affect the whole weather system months down the story. And you can't regulate that. You have to let this harmony develop. And that's what people do left to their own devices. And we have done it. There's lots of examples of history where civilizations went for 1,000 years or more in South America, in Mesopotamia, with cities, with culture, with architecture, with spirituality, civilization, without top-down control, with no signs of nobility, weaponry, or militarization. So we can do it, we have done it. And today, with the internet and the connectivity that gives us, we have more capacity to self-organize than we've ever had in history.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. Would you provide us now for the remainder of this interview with key ideas for guiding solutions for people to become more self-sufficient and to survive what I see as a predictable social civilizational crash ahead? And I don't see this happening 20 years from now. I see this happening in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, something is coming to a head. And I came into this in 1966 when I became very immersed in natural foods, sold the first ever organic whole foods in this country with my brother Craig. And just a positive note, what I've seen in the years since is this incredible growth of people taking on meditation, yoga, natural foods, herbal supplements, exercise, things that had not been heard of in the early 60s. You know, nobody looked within themselves. There was nothing in you but guts and intestines. What kind of a kook would you but think about that? We introduced people to the fact that what you ate affected your health. So people are responding, because this is a huge culture now. We got radio shows like yours out there. So we are moving in the right direction. The internet is a phenomenal device that we've created that is as yet uncontrolled by the state, even though they might be sucking data out of it. They're not managing it. And we have lots of enterprises online that are joining people together as to provide some of the services that we would normally expect corporations to do, whether that's Airbnb, giving other people rides in your car. There's just many enterprises that connect people that are outside of that state-run system. So let's do more of that. Not everybody can go out and live in the woods and have a completely self-sufficient greenhouse, but we are human beings. We are good at working together. And when you have a Hurricane Sandy sweep through the East Coast, people get together and help each other out. That's our first natural instinct, even though the Hollywood movies would have us believe.
But Gregory, that's after the fact. Let me just share a thought with you.
Yeah.
See what you think of this. I was thinking about this morning because there are a number of us, myself included, who believe that for some people, it's not for everyone, living in very creative small environments, meaning in rural environments around the world, where you have 2, 4, 10, 15 different people living, each maintaining their own sense of autonomy and purpose, but sharing some things in common, that's going to be good for millions of people. But other people are not going to feel comfortable doing that. So why not work with one city and start with one city as a model where you'll get a city that is really in disrepair. Let's just say it's Camden, New Jersey, one of the most dilapidated cities in America, one of the most crime-ridden cities in America. It is so bad, I don't even think they have a car dealership or a hotel, but about 80,000 people live there. And so you get this city, the city council, with the support of the state, to donate through eminent domain some of your worst blocks. Let's say you take a 10-block area or a 5-block area. Start even with 2 blocks. And there you go in and you examine, with engineers, you examine the buildings, and those that are structurally sound you keep. Everything else you demolish. Then you build with using the people in the environment. So it helps the people have a gainful way of living who live there, who are otherwise living in abject poverty. So now they're employed, having if they have skills. And then you build sustainable living, but it has to be sustainable. It's not just throwing up some, cheap housing.
Mm-hmm.
Completely self-sufficient, where there are rooftop gardens, there's hydroponic gardens, there's aquaculture, where you have schools, therapy centers, counseling centers for people who need counseling, holistic assisted living center, holistic medical, where physicians and nurses are there to apply principles of detoxification, because you got a lot of drug addiction, you got a lot of alcoholism, where you have big brothers and big sister centers, like a boys club and a girls club, where you have a place where children who otherwise would not be getting the attention they need can have that, where people then would have an ability to have food, have recreation, have culture, have a theater, have arts and crafts, and then have specialized skills for those people whose parents may not be able to afford to put them through the education they need. At least it gives them the skills to compete in the world, and all within an environment that they're responsible for. They're the ones living there. You're not gentrifying it. You're not taking an old neighborhood, gutting it, building nice housing and restaurants to bring in people from outside and displacing the people who are there. This is for the people who are there. Now, if you did this in one city and it worked, let's say you had a factory, and you gutted the factory, and you get the state to support the gutting of the factory, and then you get the labor hired to do it, now you can have that factory turned into all forms of a new holistic environment, whether it's living or shopping or whatever it is. And I've seen this done. I saw it done in Detroit, where I was on PBS and went down to the river, and they had these old battered up buildings from the 1940s, and they rehabbed them, and it's a beautiful environment. So I'm saying if you did this in inner cities, you could then create, you could de-ghettoize the environment, you could make them sustainable, you could have what people need, and that's the key. We're not asking people, what do you need to have a quality of life? How can we help you get there? And then allow them to participate in the process. Your thoughts?
I think that's an excellent scheme, an excellent way of moving forward, because you are getting people involved at the bottom. But when you were describing it, you kept using the term you. You examine this area, you get the people to work. Who is the you? That's what my question is. Is that a euphemism for the state?
No. You cannot have bureaucracies. You have to have groups of individuals who are more dynamic and creative. Yeah. There's two life energies, three that work together best. Creative assertives, dynamic assertives, and adaptive assertives. These are your engineers, your architects, your designers. These are the planners and the organizers. These are facilitators. These are the people who can get stuff done. And then the other people are taught how to be self-sufficient and then are able to take advantage of this environment, because all the rents would be stabilized down and low enough that even the poorest person could afford a quality of life there, and the hungriest person would have sustainable food because there would be a common garden for every block where people could choose if they wanted to have food from that, they participate. But it's all based upon participatory involvement. Yep. You don't participate, you don't get anything. I'm not one of those people who believe that all we should do is try to do everything for a person. I believe that's the worst mistake you can make.
No, of course. People have got to do it. No, I think that's a brilliant scheme, and I hope somebody picks up on it and puts it together, because so many things like that do work, and there are... You saw it happening in Detroit. People growing in their gardens and working together. But you need some sort of a central buying of that property that owns it and looks after it. But I think this is what people are doing. And even though we still have to support all the cost of the state at the same time, humans are good at that.
I think we could reduce the cost of supporting our federal government by 50% and only increase the quality of service we get, because 50 to 75% of all the money we spend with our taxes is wasted. It goes to special interests, the military-industrial complex, to support the welfare for the corporate states, for big agri, big business, big chemicals. People
Bank
think
interest.
Because people think, well, if I'm paying my taxes, you know, yes, we should all pay our taxes, but most people don't pay taxes. Some of the richest don't pay. Everybody should pay taxes, and they're not. And so if we had an ability to control that, and if we also had ability to stop waste, but these bureaucracies feed on one another. And then the whole purpose of a bureaucracy is ultimately for its own survival, not how it helps the public. And I believe that both the right and the left have been extremely short-sighted on understanding that the government should be there to support the people. The people should not fear the government. The government should not intrude in people's lives, like spying, as if they have a right to. And, you know, the bad thing of it is the people calling themselves for the people, the corporate Democrats on MSNBC, even on some Pacifica stations, these people don't represent anybody but their own interest. They're an embarrassment.
And that's why I began with that quote from 63 B.C., because... It hasn't changed, and I don't think we're ever going to, you can't expect the government to ever have our best interests at heart. They always have had their own interests at heart, way beyond looking after the people. Look, the idea that they're looking after us is just a reason to harvest money from us, some of which gets sprinkled back. But that doesn't work as a means of running society. And there's very little it does that we could not do ourselves, even down to dealing with criminality. You know, we could have a system that didn't prosper when there was more crime, which is what you have in the current system. The more crime, the better police, the better the judiciary and the penal system do. And the more victims crime to create. So many people in jail for doing something that didn't hurt anybody, for selling, you know, unpasteurized milk, or not getting the children vaccinated, or taking illicit drugs for spiritual or recreational purposes. You know, that shouldn't be going on.
But once again, people are not rotting in jail and being raped in jail, which everyone knows about, because they're a threat to society. The majority of those people are engaged in victimless crimes. It's because someone is able to profit from it. The private for-profit corporate interest have privatized the prison systems, are now privatizing the parole systems, so you actually have to pay your parole officer, and if you don't do so, you can be put back into a private prison. There's debtors' prisons. So our entire system, all of our institutions, have been impacted by this neoliberal and globalized mindset, and that's why we have to get off their grid. You cannot expect to be dealt with honorably and fairly if you're playing by their rules, because their rules are meant to benefit them and not us. I thank you, Gregory, for all the good work you've done, and I look forward to another conversation.
Okay, thank you for having me, Gary.
From the United Kingdom on Skype is Gregory Sams, author of The State is Out of Date. We can do it better. Oh, could we do it better? I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You know, I got an email today from someone named Trevor, and there is a drug for diabetes called Actos. And it decreases insulin resistance and hepatic sugar production. And one of the things that it's a triple black box warning drug, and there was a huge the U.S. jury ordered Takeda Pharmaceutical Company to pay $6 billion in punitive damages and Eli Lilly Company to pay $3 billion in a case claiming that cancer risks to the diabetic drug were concealed. So this is just another same old, where they get a slap on the wrist and they get to pay out to all these people now that got bladder cancer or other cancers from this synthetic chemical that we're putting into people. Just passing it out. And Trevor said that actually when the ruling came down from the courts that corporations were people and money was speech, that an appropriate change to our laws would be to force any corporation that was convicted of negligence in the death of a customer into Chapter 13 and devolve the company, kind of like the equivalency of death. And then all cash left over after outstanding debts were paid would go into a trust fund to pay for future claims. He says, you know, people are just, you know, especially the people in your audience, they're speaking out about this, that this is just same old, same old. Anytime people are having these horrific side effects from drugs, the U.S. juries are saying, okay, slap on the wrist and pay out some money. But nothing is getting done about
I would offer a little different perspective. And we have Utrice Lead on the line also, and Utrice, you might want to address this. I believe that juries are not providing a slap on the wrist. I believe that juries would love to see people who made these decisions at the corporate level for any product or service that they knew in advance with malice aforethought would endanger someone's life or kill people. I believe that the jury would love to convict these people and send them away to jail, but instead they're limited to what they can do. They have to give a civil fine, even in criminal cases, such as the criminal case of laundering $800 billion. The bank, no one was found guilty personally. No one went to jail. So I believe that if a company, any company, has been found to have repeatedly, more than once, violated the laws with knowledge of forethought of providing us with defective services and products that injure people, that they should lose their charter to be a corporation. Their assets should be confiscated. The stockholders should lose every penny. And that then put that money into public trusts that can help those in need and keep those people out of business. We could use 50% less corporations in the United States. If we got rid of all the banks on Wall Street, we would not be impacted because they are a circular, self-contained financial group of people. The money they make off money. They don't make by building new factories and employing people or increasing the quality of our life. We've been living with these myths. So hold people accountable at the moral level. Yes, boycott their products, because how many juries have said, Vioxx, we're given $5.5 billion. Yeah, but people continue to buy drugs from the same company that's had a history of giving us bad drugs. So we have companies that have done nothing but exploit people for decades. It's for the people to be educated enough, and we should have a database that says, here are companies that are repeat offenders, so we have a choice of boycotting them. But if we're not willing to boycott them, and we're not willing to demand that we change our rules, we're not willing to have a constitutional convention, we're not willing to return more rights to the state and against the federal government, out of the federal government, then we cannot at the same time complain, oh, we are victims, because I'm going to say how much of that victimization was caused by our inertia, indifference, or our apathy. Utrice Lead, over to you.
Thank you. You echoed a position I'd taken for quite a while, that these charters, especially by these rogue banks, these banksters, they ought to have their charters forfeited. I remember when there was a time when there was a distinction when, you know, between the thrift institutions and the commercial institutions. And now it's like everybody's in the game, you know. The thrift institutions were very conservative, they were very well run, they were policed by their board of directors and so forth, and the commercial institutions were a bit more adventurous in the way they related to the community and the spotty record many of them had in holding to established rules. But now it's like a free-for-all. Everybody's in it. And so part of the responsibility also is that you have the prosecutors, the federal agencies that should be prosecuting these banks, actually cutting deals with them because they see that, hey, it's more money in the till. We could collect a cool $8 billion here, a cool $9 billion there. And then, you know, in their view, they have decided to rewrite what punishment means. But you kind of took away a little bit, not too much, of my discussion today, which is, what's our political alternative? That's our discussion today.
We look forward to it. Eutrice Lead right now.